Live from the podcast studio, this is From Long Distance to Marriage with Rich and Andrea. We're a once long distance couple who closed 5,000 miles of distance and are now happily married.
We talk long distance, marriage and relationships. Hi guys, welcome to episode 68 of From Long Distance to Marriage. We've got another exciting guest this week, but before we get into that, we just want to ask if you're enjoying the episodes, as we hope you are, if you'd mind leaving us a quick rating or review on Apple Podcasts or your favourite platform, and it helps other people find us.
Yes. So yeah, this week we talked with Meg from the Gin and Beer It podcast, which was actually a really fun episode, I think, especially for me.
She's also the first guest we've had on her own. Previously we've had couples, we've had someone who's come on to talk about relationships.
Yeah,
she's the first guest we've had who's come on her own to talk about her own experiences.
So
it's not strictly relationship.
Yeah, so this isn't necessarily relationship focused, but it is kind of expat life focused. So you'll hear all about it in the episode, but essentially Meg is in her mid-20s, and she moved over for work after kind of doing a...
From Chicago to London.
Yeah, doing a... What's the word I'm trying... Like a grad program, grad scheme sort of thing. So it was really interesting to talk about kind of her experience with her visa and just how to find... How to navigate life as an expat in a different country.
Yes, which is the reason we wanted to talk to her was, as we said, it's not strictly about a long-distance relationship, although she has had some. But this was about, you know, we know a lot of the people that listen to this will be moving or have moved, and there's always a lot of uncertainty and doubt and anxiety. And then maybe when you have moved, sometimes you get homesick or potential feelings of regret. And so she's been here for about 4 years now. So it's really interesting to hear her talk about how I think there was an element of resentment at one point when she was here. And then she talks more positively about it as she's been here longer. So I think we just, it'd be really helpful for people who are either have made the move or thinking about making the move. That's who this episode is for.
And you can also check out her podcast, which we'll have more details on later.
And in the show notes.
And in the show notes, Gin and Beer It podcast. So enjoy.
Okay, so we're here with Meg from the Gin and Beer It podcast. Which I really like the name of that.
Yeah, I just said. Yeah.
It count as a pun? I don't know. There's going to be a word.
Slang on words.
Yeah, we're big fans of that. So Meg, we'll let you introduce yourself and say everything that you want to say.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you so much, both of you, Rich and Andrea. So basically, as you said, I am the host of Gin and Beer It podcast. I'm a 25-year-old American, and I'm from Chicago specifically. I moved to London about 4 years ago. It'll be 4 years in July when I was 21. And I have been living in London ever since. I moved here straight out of college / university to pursue a job in finance in the city of London. So kind of joined off of a grad scheme here. Was lucky to have a company that was willing to sponsor my visa, which is kind of a huge hurdle that a lot of people experience moving over here. And yeah, haven't ever really looked back. I've really enjoyed the time and decided to start Gin and Beer It about just over a year ago as kind of a way of documenting my experiences being an American in London.
So what was that visa process like for you?
So I really honestly feel like I hit the jackpot because I had a friend who was a couple years older than me in high school, who was living in London at the time with her now husband. And she was working in finance. Her situation was a little bit different to mine because she went to university in Scotland. So she had, you know, a bit more access to like applying to jobs in the UK. And she is also a Romanian citizen as well as a US citizen. So she had kind of the EU benefit.
Right.
So I knew that I wasn't going to be able to like exactly follow in her footsteps, but I kind of asked her for her advice. And she said that her company, which is called BlackRock, which is the company that I work for, they are really good about sponsoring for visas, and it's a US-based company. So they're quite open to Americans moving to some of the other regional offices throughout the world. And so she kind of introduced me to the different grad schemes that they had, and one of them kind of fit perfectly into what I had studied in uni and the internship experiences that I had. So I applied for it, and she got me in touch with someone there, and they offered me the job. And then the actual visa process, they, since BlackRock is like a massive finance company with quite a global presence, they had a third party that kind of just handheld the entire process. Like, I'm a very control freak type person, and it was kind of nice for me to, I just didn't even really have to think about it. They would ask me for the birth certificates and US passport and all the little million details that you need, but they kind of just handled the whole thing, and my company paid for it. And one day I just went to get a photo for the British residence ID or permit or whatever they call it, and that was kind of it. So yeah, I got really lucky with that, and that was going on in the weeks leading up to Brexit. And even though obviously Brexit doesn't directly impact Americans, you know, moving to the UK or living in the UK, I definitely noticed a downtick in my company as well as loads of other companies sponsoring for visas, just because I think of like the uncertainty around the entire European situation. So I feel like timing wise, I got pretty lucky, because I think that, you know, a couple months or a couple years later, I might have struggled a lot more to have that opportunity.
Yeah. So when you say leading up to Brexit, I'm guessing by the time frame you mean leading up to the vote for Brexit.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So not Brexit then ended up taking years,
which was kind of it was kind of even worse back then, I think, because then that it's really hard to see. You were over here at that time.
I moved over here 3 weeks after the vote. So I was in the UK when the actual vote happened. So yeah, it was a very interesting time.
It really was. And I think like anyone who wasn't here or had been there before and after, like, it was a really weird atmosphere. I remember the day after the vote, because the office I was in at the time, we had some people from different European countries, and like there was just a really strange atmosphere. Like, you just knew things had changed, but then that was the start of so much uncertainty, which didn't end, you know, it still hasn't really ended.
Yeah, there's still a lot we don't know about.
So, I suppose I just wanted to kind of clarify whether that was before Brexit, as in really recently, or the vote, when that all kind of triggered all that chaos.
Is that 2016?
Yeah.
So it would have been June of 2016. And I think also the biggest like immediate impact that had is my student loans became a lot more expensive kind of the moment that vote happened, because obviously the pound crashed. And I was going to be making a living in, you know, sterling and paying off student loans in US dollars. So that was pretty devastating. So you
coming over here, was that, are you in England because the job you wanted opened up and happened to be in England, or did you choose the job that, you know, was it England where you wanted to be and the job came after that?
England was where I wanted to be. So I visited London as kind of a high school graduation trip with my family when I was 17. And I was just absolutely in love and just kind of turned to my mom and I was like, I'm going to move here someday. And she was like, okay, sure. And now whenever I say I'm going to do something, she takes it much more seriously.
I mean, London is amazing.
Yeah. And so, I love home. Like a lot of people that I've spoken to who move really far away, you know, some of them really don't like where they're from, and that's not the case for me at all. Like, I will sing Chicago's praises until the cows come home. But yeah, there's nowhere like London. It's really great.
Yeah. So can you, like, for people who haven't had the fortune of going there, can you give a bit of an American perspective of what's so good about it?
About London? Yeah, definitely. I think the big one that, you know, a lot of like that's easy to experience even if you come over here just as a tourist, is like it really is the gateway to Europe. And again, kind of a controversial statement given Brexit, right? But if you set all of that aside, just the fact that, you know, you can come to London, and London itself is this incredible, you know, cosmopolitan city with, you know, some food and the West End and so many cool things to experience even if you just stay in London. But then you can also get like 30-pound flights to Italy, and, you know,
especially just at the moment.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So yeah, the access to the rest of the world, and not, and again, not even needing to leave, like the number of people that are in London that are from all over, you know, there's like, I live in Southwest London and there's like a massive Australian population here and stuff like that. So it's
yeah,
just
there's
like
so many Australians in London, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I think like I always grew up thinking that Chicago was really diverse. And Chicago, it is diverse, but that coming to London, like London just in a lot of ways feels like the capital of the world. So that's yeah. something I really enjoyed.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. Out of curiosity, so you came to London when you were pretty young and decided it was somewhere you want to live. And now you've been here for a fair amount of time. Has any of the shine worn off at all for you, do you think? Is there anything that you think you were a bit enchanted by that now you're a bit like, oh okay.
So I'd be really curious, Andrew, if you had a similar experience, but I basically had the experience of like, I was so focused on moving here and kind of making that dream come true that once it did come true and I was here and I kind of settled into the reality of what that was, I like kind of completely resented it here. I at the time, pertinent to your podcast, I was in a long distance relationship. I had a boyfriend who was actually in New York. And still we met after I had already made the decision to move to London. So we carried on dating. And I still came over here, but that was a huge factor in me just kind of resenting London and also just like the little cultural differences and things that made me homesick that you could never pick up as a tourist here. You have to just kind of be like living a normal daily life here to really feel those. I found the first like 6 to 8 months really, really difficult. And I found myself kind of having to fall back in love with London. And I eventually definitely did. But yeah, the first half of a year. So I was like, I'm going to stick this out for a year and then I'm out of here. Like I can't do this anymore. And then I'm a pretty happy-go-lucky person and I was doing things and having experiences that like, you know, people don't dream of doing in their lifetime. And I was doing them in my early 20s. So I knew how fortunate I was and I was really enjoying myself, but I was definitely at the beginning, it just felt like I had made like this crazy leap and I wasn't really sure what I was doing. But now it's like 4 years in and I love it, but I love it in like a completely different way. I definitely don't look at London the same way as I did when I was like 17 visiting as a tourist.
So yeah. What were some of the cultural differences that you mentioned?
I think like there are just like, for example, I've never felt like over-the-counter medicine here is like nearly as good or effective as America.
Yeah, 100% right.
Sounds so silly, but it's just like I had a really good immune system in the US, but not having grown up here and been exposed to any of like the viruses and bugs and flus and all of that, that like the entire first year I lived here, I was sick all the time with just something.
Well, that's the thing about London is you're going to, if you're not used to London, I guess it's, okay. So this reminds me of when you first came over, because I tried to warn Andrea what London would be like in terms of how busy it is and how popular it is. And she's like, no, it's cool. I've been to LA.
No, I'm like from right near LA.
But like the city of it.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's going to be different. And then we got to Victoria Station, which is your very first entry into London, and you can explain.
Well, you left me with the suitcases and went to the bathroom, and it was rush hour, and I thought I was going to get, like, trampled. I was just, yeah, I mean, it's chaotic. And the other thing you told me was that the tube would make my nose black from spending time down there. I was like, that's ridiculous. I don't believe that. Yeah, and then, yeah, I blew my nose after, like, a day of traveling around London on the tube, and I was just disgusted. But I think I had a really similar experience kind of to you. I mean, it's slightly different. I think, you know, I moved here to get married and to start a new life. And so I think there was even more of that kind of fairy tale, you know, kind of, oh, this is going to happen. And I think at first it was a little bit wobbly in terms of like, oh gosh, this is scary. Ooh, was this the right decision? Like, but we were completely happy. And then I was really busy planning our wedding. And then I think once that all kind of settled down, we'd gotten married, we had to do it pretty quickly because of my visa kind of stipulations, and then it was just kind of making home. So I think probably the first year, while it was really difficult and put a lot of pressure on a relationship because we were just kind of thrown together and had to figure this all out, and deal with the expenses of visas and stuff. You know, we were really excited and there was a lot of things for me to discover. And then I think probably since that first year, I've kind of more and more realized those things that make me homesick or those things that annoy me or those differences that are, you know, inconvenient and stuff like that. So it's been more gradual for me, but I think in the past couple of years, it's, you know, I've been living here for 8.5 years.
2011. June, yeah. Wow. July.
Now it's easier to think of like home is like perfect and having no flaws because it's been so long since I was there.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely something that I've experienced, that I experienced pretty quickly is like, I think especially because I moved here straight out of college, I interned back at home, but I've never had a full-time job at home. So never having had a full-time job at home and kind of starting my career here, when I go back home, it actually just feels like a holiday now. Like, I don't know what it would be like to try to like move back home and become a functioning, you know, full-time working person in Chicago. Cause every time I go home now.
And then you see the other difference is like, my understanding is we get more paid holiday time here.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
More affordable here.
And so I think, you know, like with any two countries, there's give and takes. Like Andrea's favorite thing when she's having a bad day or something's happened here, this wouldn't fucking happen in America. Like this shithole country. I'm like, this would happen. Or you'd have a different problem. You know, so, you know, you made the point, you go back to Chicago and it's a holiday, but then if you were to get a job, you'd say, why do I only get 1 week of paid leave? And you know, those are kind of considerations. For us, it wasn't a consideration of why we moved or why we lived here and why Andrew moved here. But if we were to really write a list of pros and cons of both countries, that would be on the list. Because for Andrew being over here, it's money aside, it's very feasible to get time off work to go back to America for 2 weeks and spend good time with the family and friends. Whereas if we lived out there in America, it would be a bigger problem for me to come back home every year to see my family if it was a job that only gave me 1 week of paid leave. So like there's these, it's interesting for me because one of our really early episodes was on, I think we called it What Amuses Us About Each Other's Countries. And it was essentially just, you know, the small cultural differences that people wouldn't necessarily think about because you're obviously aware of it that over here in England we're really, really heavily influenced by American culture. So you kind of think you know American culture, but you don't. And it's probably the same thing for you guys coming over to England. And
oh yeah, were you disappointed at how like old and run down everything looked because you thought everything was going to be like Downton Abbey?
Yeah, I mean, I think it wasn't as much that as it was, I think when I first visited London as a tourist, I think we stayed at the County Hall Marriott, which is right behind the London Eye. We did like the tacky, you know, hop on, hop off bus tours and went to the Harry Potter studios and like all the stuff that first time tourists do when they come to London. And so like, I remember thinking, cause you know, I'm someone who grew up in Chicago. Like I remember thinking there is not like a seedy area of London. And then when I moved here and I moved to North London and like I lived in Kentish Town and, the actual, like the flat that I lived in was really lovely. And, you know, like I would never say Kentish Town is unsafe, but there's like definitely parts of Kentish Town and Tufnell Park that are a bit unsavory. And so just like moving here and realizing it's a city like everywhere else, and there's going to be areas where you don't want to be as a woman alone at dark, you know, and stuff like that. Like, yeah. It was just like, I got kind of hit in the face with reality. And that's not London's fault. That's just like me, you know, growing up a bit, but yeah, that was like a very interesting experience.
Well, yeah. It's a wake up call because I mean, when it doesn't matter what city you go to visit, you know, there's no reason to those maybe less savory areas. They're not the touristy spots. That's residential. It might be, you know, that kind of area. So you don't really get taken there as a tourist. You're going to museums and, you know, attractions and things like that. And they're usually in the more central up to date areas. So I think, I mean, I probably think that of, you know, certain areas of cities we've been to, like, oh, it's all really beautiful, but really every city has those parts.
I have that tendency. If I'm away somewhere, it just immediately feels safe to me because it's holiday, you know?
Yeah.
But then, you know, there's still that bit in your mind that's like, no, it's not this, but there's going to be dodgy areas. But I always find it fascinating to hear those small things. I mean, I know one for me, and I still can't really get my head around it, like the land of the free. And then you've got that whole jaywalking climb. And but the people I'm curious,
it's land of the free, not land of the stupid. You don't want to just walk in the middle of the road.
Well, no, you look both ways like we do, but you don't get fucking arrested for it.
Cars are bigger there.
I remember watching I can't remember what it was, but the TV was on and it was are you familiar with our no, it wasn't, because that was during the day. But are you familiar with our watershed? Is it Prince? I don't know what it is. But the watershed where 9 o'clock in the evening is, it becomes just anything can be put on TV.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize America didn't really have this. So we were out there and it was late at night, you know, like 11, maybe that late at night. And there was some TV show on and some woman was topless, but it was all pixelated out. And I was like, wow, what's going on? You're like, oh, you can't see boobs on TV. They can't swear on TV. And then like a couple of days later on, just Goodfellas is on in the middle of the day, but it's been heavily edited.
It wasn't cable, though. That was the thing. I was
like, this is crazy, because that's just not how it works here. And it's obviously how it works there, but you'd never think of something like that when you're thinking, what's life going to be like? And obviously that wouldn't have a material effect on what it's like to be there. It's just something that even now we'll put the TV on when we're visiting, and it may be something like that. And it'll just kind of amuse me or irritate me, or it will take twice as long to watch a movie in America because you have so many more ad breaks. And then we're watching that film, weren't we? And then the person was talking about their favorite bits. It's like, oh, I saw this film in the theater and I love this scene coming up, but we're going to have an ad break. And then when the ad break finishes, I'm going to talk to you a bit more and then we'll resume the film. And I've never experienced that before. And thankfully I haven't experienced it since. But
so how often do you get to go back home?
So I'm pretty lucky. I usually go home twice a year. So when I first moved here, I went home 2 years in a row for Thanksgiving and Christmas, which is kind of because I just wasn't ready to give up Thanksgiving, even though it was kind of like stacking two trips on top of each other. Now I tend to space it out. Like I'll do like a summer trip and Christmas. And then my mom is a consultant. So she travels about 5 days a week and has racked up loads of air miles. So I'm quite fortunate that my parents usually visit me about twice a year as well. So I kind of get to see my family like quarterly,
awesome.
You know, on average, which is, I'm really, really fortunate in that sense. And I think it's kind of helped extend the longevity of me being here. Cause I am really close with my family. So I think if I was going like 9 to 12 months without seeing them, I would struggle a lot more.
Yeah. Let's talk about that a little bit. So what did you what's been your experience of one, the, I suppose, cultural experiences a little bit, you know, like Thanksgiving. I guess Christmas is 95% the same, but obviously we don't do Thanksgiving. And then being away from birthdays and seeing your friends when they're out and, you know, just day-to-day life like that. How have you found that?
I think it is like, it is a bit of a wake-up call. I mean, not that I didn't know it, but I just didn't really, until you experience it, you don't really realize how the world is just going to keep turning regardless of where you're sitting in the world. And you know, I just like, like you said, like missing birthdays. And you know, they're just like, they're things that were such a part of my life back at home, but they're just not big enough for me to fly home for them. So for example, like St. Patrick's Day is massive in Chicago, but I haven't yet flown back for St. Patrick's Day, and I honestly doubt I will because March is such a shitty time to go to Chicago. It's stuff like that where it's like, it's tough to miss, but I just kind of had to learn how to remind myself that at the same time that I'm seeing, you know, and I think social media plays such a huge part in that, at the same time that I'm seeing all of my friends getting together and, you know, my family able to just see each other on just like a random Sunday without it being like a big deal. At the same time, like they're seeing me have all these experiences over here. So it's not just me that's, you know, feeling like they're missing out on a little bit, but yeah, it's definitely tough, and it never stops being, you know, you learn how to cope with it, but it never stops being a challenge.
Yeah, it is really complex, and like the things that will hit you, and you'll think like you eventually get used to, you know, we don't go home for every Christmas, or I don't go home. We don't go to my home for every Christmas. And you know, I can cope with that pretty well because Christmas is still a really big deal here. Rich's family, you know, celebrates beautifully and always makes me feel really welcome. And I think really tries to make an effort to compensate for the fact that I'm away from my family, which is always really nice. I really struggle at Thanksgiving when we don't go back to visit because it's just Thursday here. And it's awful being at work. And like, I'll go on my lunch break and look at my phone and people back home will be getting up and starting to bake pies and, you know, start sharing all this stuff on Facebook and Instagram, and I think I'm just sitting at my desk eating my shitty sandwich, like it's just another day. And then because it's a Thursday, you can't really cook a big meal after work, so it's got to wait to the weekend, so it doesn't feel right because it's not the right day, you don't have the right people there. But the
flip side of that is it's something you've introduced here, and we've had, you don't really do it as much now, I guess, but the first few years we alternated, so you know, it would alternate between my different family members, and then it'd be one set of friends and a different set of friends. It's been what I really like about the whole long distance thing is that it allows that sharing of new experiences too. So, you know, obviously for me, it means visiting America and being part of Thanksgiving when we're there and all the different things of American life. But then equally here with Andrea living here, it means people who it would just be Thursday or a weekend around that Thanksgiving time, they're now seeing what that's like.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel the same. Like, I don't, I'm sure it doesn't. It's like, I don't know, like, eventually, obviously, you know, if we had stayed there, eventually I would start hosting Thanksgivings, but when it's not on your mom's dishes and it's not your grandma's casserole dish, like, those things, you start to realize, oh, my God, that makes...
they're not around either.
No, you know, it makes a huge difference. Yeah, and so... I remember the first Thanksgiving that I did, I had just moved. It was the first, few months after I moved over.
Well, you came over in July, so.
Yeah, so the first 5 or 6 months, and I'd never cooked anything. Maybe helped my mom, you know, get the grounds rolls out of the Pillsbury pop thing. Like, that was all I'd done. And I tried to do this whole thing myself, and your family didn't really understand what a big deal it was. They thought it was just like a Sunday roast. They didn't understand that it was a holiday. And actually really important. And like,
because all we hear about, really thinking about it, is Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah.
We don't hear about Thanksgiving holiday.
Well, I mean, you know, the day is pretty much cooking for that, but you know, they were falling asleep at the table. it's like, well, I'm not doing this again. But, yeah, there's those little things that get to you, and it's awesome that you get to go home that much. I think we probably have usually one or two kind of sections of my family will come visit usually once a year. And then, you know, we'll go in the years that no one comes back. So the longest I ever go is 2 years, which is too much. But usually there's a few visits. I mean, my parents will come here. My sister and her family will come here. That breaks it up a little bit. But one thing you mentioned that I found really interesting, going back a little bit, you said that when you go home, because you never really worked full time there, it kind of feels just like a big vacation, which I can kind of relate to on the opposite side, because – I did work full time and stuff. I was a teacher before I moved out here. So the difference in like going home and like, I don't have anything to do. I just get to hang out and chill. Like, it totally feels like a vacation. I almost don't know where I go in that picture. Have you experienced that at all? Like, when you've gone back, like, how do I fit
absolutely.
In?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
I completely know what you mean, because there's a lot of things that go into that. The first thing, and it's really trivial, but my parents took me off their car insurance because, like, with very good reason. I don't even live in the country anymore. But because of that, like, I don't really drive when I go home, and I'm usually like bumming rides off of my 20-year-old sister. Mm-hmm. And like, just that loss of like basic autonomy. It like, I literally feel like a, you know, 14-year-old every time I go home in that sense. And it like, it's actually, you know, it sounds like it's just such a first world problem. Like, oh my God, I can't drive. But, I honestly, like my boyfriend and I went to Chicago for 2 weeks for Christmas this year. And I think that like next time we go back for an extended period of time, we might just rent a car, just because it's like, it's just kind of exhausting. Like, feeling like you have to rely on other people to drive you around places.
And you've gone from being a family member to, I guess, feeling more like a visitor.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, my friends, like I said before, like, the world doesn't stop turning. It just, you know, like, also, and I'm sure you guys have picked up on this, but like, Americans get married so much earlier than Europeans, in my experience. You know, so like, it's so jarring for me. Like, back at home, all of my friends are married, engaged, or on the way to being engaged and married. And, you know, we're all like between 25 and 28. But over here, like, if I were to, you know, make a comment about, like, as a 25-year-old that, you know, me and my boyfriend were like starting to talk about engagement, like, so many people over here would be like, oh my God, you're so young. Like, what are you doing? You know?
Why do you think that is? Are there any like obvious reasons for that?
I don't like, I really don't know.
From Utah, where it's like, you know, really religious.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that you would expect it from more of like a rural area where, you know, not to slag off people that are from rural areas, but just like there's less to do. And so people get married younger and start families, you know, like it's just, that's how it is. But yeah, it's, I don't really know what it, and I mean, people in America are definitely getting married like later than historically. I mean, my parents got married when they were like 22, had me when they were 23. And I wouldn't say that's like the norm in America anymore.
No.
But
I wonder if it's to do with the fact that, I mean, England and maybe not all of Europe, but it's a lot more secular, I know for sure. Maybe it's, you know, I think Americans in particular tend to be a bit more religious. Maybe that's why they get married a little bit earlier. I don't know.
I've never been able to pin it down, but it was honestly like you set aside all the like me complaining about like, you know, like over the counter drugs and stuff. Like that was one of the differences. Cause when I moved over here, I was living with a couple, and I was living with the girlfriend and the couple, and then the boyfriend eventually moved in with us. But you know, we went for dinner with like my parents when like one of my first nights in London, and Mila was just like, oh yeah. And, cause she was 27, I was 21, or she was 26. I was 21 at the time. And she was like, yeah. And, I've been with my boyfriend Chillo for about 8 years. And I was just like, as an American, especially freshly out of college, like I was just like, oh my God, like they're going to get engaged like tomorrow and I'm going to have to move out. You know, like I was just like, and then, you know, like they only just got engaged, you know, this past year, like, it, you know, like 3 years later, which is like, you know, not everyone like waits that amount of time, but it just like on average, like it just, people here just get married a lot later. So yeah, it's weird. Like here a lot, like I have a lot of friends that are in serious relationships, like living with partners and stuff, but, definitely not a majority of my friends here are engaged or married, but back at home, like it is definitely the majority. And so going home, it's a bit weird, because everyone's lives are just like changing so rapidly.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think, you know, when we got married, a lot of my friends were getting married or had gotten married, and then, you know, then all the kids can't, you know, not quite 10 years, but almost 10 years older than you, which is painful to say. You know, so now then, you know, kids, and then now they're slowing down, not having kids, and then kind of hit a wave of our friends here, then all started getting married probably three or four years ago in the past couple of years. Like every year we've had all these weddings, but you know, our friends are now in their early 30s. And so you're totally right. There's at least a 5-year delay before, you know, people start getting married.
We're really cynical here. Yeah. So maybe it's like, well, I need to make sure it's the right one. Not going to get.
I honestly think that's a huge part of it. Like just from my experience, I do think that it, like, just the English way is that, like, you know, people would rather date for a seemingly really long time before getting engaged than get married and get divorced, you know?
What's your experience with that? Like I said, you know, our cynicism, and because this is one of the big things for Andrew, I think, certainly when you got used to it fairly quickly with me, but then, you know, then there was the family adjustment. And then when you started working here, the way we talk to each other is very different to certainly our experience in America. Mm. Chicago is a long way from where we were, but that was a bit of a learning curve for you, wasn't it? Just they're so mean to each other and so sarcastic, and even the families, like, we like to insult each other and we're very cynical. And
I think family is, well, maybe, you know, cynicism may not be a widespread American trait. Of course, there's going to be tons of Americans that are, but it's not what we're known for. I think families, you can really rib each other and you know, do that. But what really shocked me was, like, people in the workplace doing it. And, you know, I think you probably have a similar experience, Meg, that, like, you're really close friends, like, you're very best friends. You can kind of be mean and say stuff like that to each other, but you wouldn't dream of doing it to people that you didn't have, like, a really deep connection with. Like, you just don't do that because it just seems really rude. I mean, did you experience that at all?
100%.
London,
like, it was so, I mean, like you said, like, my family absolutely, like, busts each other's balls constantly. Like, you know, we have a WhatsApp group that's basically dedicated to that. So yeah, and same with my friends, like family and friends, that doesn't faze me at all. But you know, that, like, I just, coming up, like, I think it's really compounded by the fact that Chicagoans, like Midwesterners, there's this concept of Midwest nice. Like, they're just known for being like just the nicest kind of group of people in America stereotypically. And I kind of grew up hearing about that, never really thought that, like, you know, my people were any nicer than anyone else. And then moved here and just like, for me, definitely at work, I noticed it, but it was also just like buying coffee or being served at a restaurant, which I feel like the service level here is a whole other rant that I could go on.
A whole episode about that.
Honestly, like I've considered it with my own podcast, but it's just like, it's the way that people kind of speak to each other. And it was like that paired with the fact that like English people and Londoners in particular, like kind of bang on about how overly polite they are, that I was just like, I'm really confused as to how you guys think you're so polite when I find you so rude.
I mean, London's kind of its own microcosm in that, because London is, people who don't live in London take the piss out of Londoners for being rude and not talking to each other. And I don't know if you've gone up north yet, but they're apparently a lot friendlier and they'll say hello. I mean, your brother had this, he went for a run.
Yeah, my brother came to visit.
And we don't live in London, but we're close to London.
Yeah, we're southeast. And my brother came to visit, and I don't think he'd been to England before. And he went for a run, like just in the local park, like pretty lake area. And he came back and he's like, I don't like English people. I'm like, what's wrong? And he's like, I said good morning to everyone I ran past, and only the old people with dogs said it back to me. Like, all the young people also running looked at me like I was crazy.
But in fairness, this was like 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah, but people
were
out.
There's some big bearded man running towards you. We're not used to saying hello at the best.
Yeah, but his tone is very like, good morning. Like,
yeah, he's...
Yeah, but I know what you mean. Like, there's those little interactions, I think...
We go out of our way to avoid eye contact with people we don't know.
And so we don't. And so I feel really weird now. I mean, I've probably gotten used to it now, but like, walking on the sidewalk in America... Maybe like New York City and maybe central Chicago. It's not, I think cities can be, people are busy, so they don't always make the time to connect. But, you know, you look at someone, you make eye contact, and if you don't say hello or something, you nod. And I think here for so long, I didn't know what to do because my natural reaction was to do that. But then you can tell that they're not sure what to do with their eyes and they're trying to look away from you. And it makes something that doesn't have to be awkward, really awkward.
It, there was an article, I think it was like The Onion, yeah, one of those kind of parody sites. And it said the headline was something like, Londoners really confused after all these Northerners come in and start saying hello.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Didn't know how to handle it. And that is right.
But yeah, I think big cities can be kind of lonely, and just because everyone is so busy. And so I can imagine, you know, we've lived in kind of a suburban area for the whole time I've lived here. So people might be a bit more, you know, slow paced, not in such a rush. But I can imagine living in a city like that for you. And even like you said, buying a coffee, you don't have that. Like, how's your day going? You know, oh, have a great one. You know, it might feel a bit isolating. Did you have that at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even just like, and it still happens. Like, my boyfriend and I just moved in together in November. And we're living in a flat in a Victorian conversion. So we have two people above us. And it was, you know, we moved in around Christmas time. So I was just like, I'm just going to leave. Yeah, I had baked cookies anyway. I was like, I'm just going to leave our new neighbor's cookies. And like, it, you know, just like in Chicago, that's just like a kind of standard way you'd be friendly with your neighbors. And that way, like, if you have a package coming or, you know, just, it's just a good kind of relationship to build. And like, literally never got a thank you from either of them. And then just like told that story to some English friends, and they were just like, well, you're fucking weird for leaving cookies for people that you've never met before.
You see, you know what, funnily enough, my boss has just this week written a new article about narcissism. And I don't think it's strictly what we're talking about being narcissistic, but he was making the point, like, we're kind of so self-absorbed now. He gave a really good example that he was up in London for Valentine's Day, and he said, you know, there's balloons and cards and flowers and blah 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 for this. And he said, and then he got on the tube and people weren't giving their seat up for a pregnant lady, they weren't opening the doors, people, they weren't in on the train first. And it's like, kind of paying lip service to this, oh, it's a romantic day and I want to get my leg over, is the example that he, or the terminology he used. But it kind of got like, it reminded me of what you just said then about the cookies. It's like, it shouldn't be weird to do something nice for your neighbors. And then it shouldn't be weird to say thank you for that.
Yeah.
But that is the way we are. But I don't remember it always being that way. I mean, again, like you said, I grew up in a bit more suburban area. And we knew our neighbors and stuff. So maybe it's just different, but...
Andrea, have you felt like it's hardened you at all? Because I definitely think I'm a bit more brash than I was before I moved here, which I'm not like super proud of. But I did, like, I definitely, again, getting back to like, you know, the standard of like waiter service in restaurants and stuff, like I'll kind of complain or be a bit more moany than I think I ever would have been back at home, just because like I feel like as a Londoner I've learned that sometimes that's just how you have to like get things done.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I'm,
you still get timid though.
As a rule, I'm actually quite sensitive, and so if someone says something like that, or if I feel I have to kind of say something that I don't feel I should, I can get like almost emotional, like the injustice.
She doesn't like me joking with staff, do you?
Yeah, I don't, well, not joking, but like, oh, can you give us 50% off? Like, it embarrasses me, but sometimes we get a discount, so it's fine.
Yeah.
But no, I think probably, yeah, I think I have a really good example of this is like, you know, growing up in America where people can have guns, you don't say things to people in cars when they're driving bad because you never know what's going to happen, because bad things happen in cars when people have guns. We live like off of a main road, and the road you have to take to get to our road is like a really narrow Victorian lane, but it's actually pretty busy. And there's a fish and chip shop on the corner, and there's only a few parking spaces behind it. So you get like big vans, like, you know, plumbers and stuff like that, parking on the corner, sitting there eating their fish and chips, and they're blocking this whole lane. Anyways, it means that we can't get in and out of our road very easily, or there'll be cars, you know, just lined up waiting to get up the road and down the road, and there's nothing you can do.
And they completely don't give. They know that they know they're blocking the road up. They just don't give.
They don't care. And there's been years of this. You know, we've lived in our house for 5 years now, and years of me saying I'm going to do something, and years of Rich saying he's going to do something, and neither of us really do. I said something to one guy once, like, you're really not helping the situation. Like, you're blocking the whole road. But I was so calm, and you were like, I can't believe you could do that. Like three, so that was 5 years ago. Fast forward to like a few weeks ago, and I'm sitting there, and there's this jerk just sitting there by his car, and I'm waiting to go down. Lady can't get past me. We're just looking at each other like, I'm sorry, I don't know what to do, me and this lady. So finally I reverse. It doesn't help. She can't get past me, but my car is now level with his, this guy in the van. And I roll down my window and honk at him, and he looks at me, and I was like, you need to move. And he's like, he kind of looks at me, and I was like, you are blocking this entire road. No one can go up and no one can go down because you are sitting there. And he just looked at me and kind of nodded. And I was like, go. And he just like looked at me and said, I will. And I was like, you need to do it now. And just like rolled my window up and zipped off, because, but I would never have done that before. But I feel like if you don't stand up for yourself and be a little bit like the word you said, brash, you'll get flattened here. You really
absolutely
will.
Yeah. No, that's definitely how I feel. But I think like, I also relish the opportunity to be like super, super sweet and friendly and chatty and American, where people will kind of humor me as well. So
well, I use that as a way to kind of, I almost use that as a weapon here. Like if, like, for instance, you know, I work in an agency, and if someone is a marketing agency, if, you know, client's being difficult, I will just lay it on so adorably so they can't be difficult with me. Like, they don't know what definitely to do with that kind of behavior.
Yeah, what's
it disarms
like
them.
Yeah.
Because I find when I go to America, like, a lot of the times people almost sort of fawn over me having a British accent, and mainly like shop clerks and stuff like that, but it's fairly regular. Is that equal for you guys here?
No.
Absolutely not.
No, we get told... you in America, oh, I love your accent, I love the way you say that word. Here it's like, that's not how you pronounce it. Yeah. That's, you add some U's in there, take away Z's and add S's instead. Like, we're constantly being corrected. Do you find that?
Oh yeah, 100%. But like, I just don't think, like, you're never going to be special, like, in London or, you know, in the, like, my boyfriend's family is from kind of just outside Nottingham. And I have noticed, like, when we go up to visit them, pubs, you know, like little village pubs and stuff like that, people seem to be a bit more interested in the fact that, like, I sound very different, because there's few people up there that with, you know, that don't have a Yorkshire accent, basically. But down south in London, like, I don't think being American is ever going to impress anyone.
No, and it's almost like a suspicion, not like, oh, where are you from? It's like, where are you from? Like,
Yeah.
And I think the first time I came to visit, I was here for a month, And so the first couple of weeks, you know, I was completely immersed. We were really in the local, you know, we were in Sussex and we were in Kent and a couple of days in London. And so I was really around English people. We were watching English TV, maybe like, you know, American movies and Friends and stuff like that. But I really just, you know, I talked to my parents, but the only Americans I heard were my family and my friends, and then the few TV shows that I knew. So the first time we went up to London, like, well, maybe the second time we went, and like a horde of American tourists went past me, I was like, oh my God, they sound so weird. Is that what I sound like? This just seems so weird. It only took a few weeks to kind of become unattuned, if that's a word, to it. And I'll never forget, I was going up to, go up to trainings in London sometimes, and I took the train up, and it was a beautiful, like, it was like the day before Halloween, and I was going to a training over by Marble Arch. I thought, it's a really long walk, but I have tons of time. It's a beautiful morning. I'm going to walk through Hyde Park all the way up. It's beautiful. And there's people riding bikes and jogging, and it's a beautiful morning. Stop and get, like, the best coffee I've ever gotten to Starbucks. And then I'm walking, and I look up, and there's just this huge group of women running towards me, and they're all in tutus and double horns and cat outfit. Like, they're just doing their, like, a running group, like a park running group, and they're all in Halloween costumes. And they just run past, and they all have American accents. And it just made me smile so big, because, like, of course, those would be the American women. Like, the British women are not going to do that. Like, I don't know. When you do get that sense of familiarity, you just kind of, it feels really, really good.
Absolutely. Yeah, completely. And it definitely, like, I was fortunate that I had a couple American coworkers that kind of helped me get my fix. And yeah, I feel like I've gotten a lot better at, like, you know, just kind of just getting little bits of American culture in here and there when I need it. I will admit, like, when we have Americans from our New York office, like, come visit in for a week or something, like, I'm like, oh, just tell me that's not what I sound like. Just tell me. Like, I'm just like, oh God.
No, you probably sound weird. You have some hybrid accent like me, and no one knows what to do with it.
Yeah. I think certain things I might have a bit of a twang, but I think for me, it's more the colloquialisms and, like, the different phrases and stuff that I use. I'm completely foreign.
Yeah. Well, that you have to, people make fun of you if you don't. Yeah. So you do adapt those things. And then there's also kind of the inflection. I think, I don't know if Chicago's is kind of known for this, is I'm from the West Coast, so everything ends in a question. And it's definitely not like that, you know, here. So everything kind of ends
It drops off. Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if I'm talking to people here and I drop in Americanisms, I get picked up on it. If I'm talking to my family back home and I'm dropping in Britishisms, I get picked up on it. So basically I never talk right.
Mm-hmm. But I definitely have noticed I switch it. Like, definitely when I go home, but I've also noticed it if I'm hanging out with Americans here or just speaking to Americans here, like, all of a sudden I'm saying elevator, I'm saying Halloween costume instead of like fancy dress or whatever. Like, I'm not really conscious of it though, but I definitely switch it on and off.
I know what you mean. I think, like,
I find I do that because I think on my first trip out there,
No,
everyone's really friendly. They just didn't understand me. So I'd be saying something, I don't know what that word is. So I find myself, I don't think I pick up any sort of accent, but I try and use the American words or phrasing just so that people don't say, what's that? What are you talking about?
Because you got that a lot.
I did get that all the time.
I do. I find that too. And I think sometimes when I'm talking to another American or talking to my family back home, it's almost like my mouth relaxes, and I think I don't realize that it's almost like I'm holding my mouth differently when I'm talking to British people, because, you know, that inflection, it comes out, it kind of falls out differently. There's been a couple instances, like, I was at work and my mom called my cell phone mobile and I kind of ignored it because I was at work, and then she did it again, and I thought, okay. So I picked it up and I was like, hello, and there's nothing. I could hear, like, background noise. I thought, okay, she's accidentally called me, but my parents were, like, on vacation in Washington, D.C., so I didn't know what was going on, hung up. A few minutes later, it happens again. I pick it up, and same thing, background noise. So I call her back, and this is in the office, like my bosses weren't around, it was just my colleagues and myself. So I just thought, oh, I won't bother going out of the room. I'll just make sure everything's okay really fast. And she picked up and, you know, she's very, very American because why wouldn't she be? She's lived there her whole life. And, you know, I said, oh, like, are you okay? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, oh, you keep butt dialing me. Like, what? So she's like, oh, sorry. My phone probably just opened up in my bag and keeps calling you. Like, we're fine. So talk for like 2 seconds, hang up. And everyone goes, I've never heard you sound more American than you just did while you were talking to her. Like, you switch into it. When we come back from spending Christmas or like a couple weeks there, people say, oh, wow, you sound really you get American.
Like
a
refresher, yeah.
Yeah. Same thing with you. Rich's mom is Welsh. So when she goes back and sees family in Wales, she comes back sounding like Nessa, which is always pretty
amazing. I love that.
What do you think of the British comedy?
I love it. But I honestly grew, and it's part of the reason why I, you know, wanted to travel here as a tourist and then subsequently wanted to move here. Like, I was raised more on the BBC. Well, it was BBC America. But the BBC than like I was American television. Like my parents just always had British television shows playing all the time. So that aspect, I mean, there's still, since I've started dating my boyfriend, I've found that there is a limit to what English like humor I will relate to. And that limit is Alan Partridge. Like, I just don't find it funny.
What about the royal family? Like, not the actual royals, but the TV show, The Royal Family. Have you been?
Yeah, that one. He absolutely loves that one as well. It's okay. I don't dislike it.
I've honestly never ever met anyone who's not English like it. I think it's so
specific
because it's almost it's funny because it's so accurate rather than over the top, and you know, it's almost like it's kind of like did you ever see like the English version of The Office?
Yeah exactly.
It's funny because it's so relatable rather than the hilarious situation. So like the royal family is like that. If you don't really either live in it or you had friends who that was life for them, it's just kind of like, what the fuck is this? Why you said we're just watching people on a couch.
And it was depressing and dark, and he's always in the same shirt, and it just makes me feel really uncomfortable. But I mean, like Only Fools and Horses and Gavin and Stacey and the Inbetweeners and like all that stuff I think is hilarious. And
yeah, no, same. Those are all some of my favorite shows.
Yeah. It's awesome. I mean, there is good stuff. So when in London, if you feel like you need an American fix, what do you do? Where do you go?
Oh, that's a really good question.
Bubblegum. That's so stereotypical.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I just hang out with some of my American friends. I think like a lot of times that's enough. You know, there's like I don't really like, you know, kind of like British versions of American things. Like pizza is such a thing in Chicago. I obviously eat pizza here, but it's not like I'm missing home, I'm going to get pizza, cause it's just not the same.
Yeah.
And I'm like a really, really big baseball fan, but like the Major League Baseball came to London last summer and they're coming again this summer. And I just like, it's just not the same to me. So I just, and also the tickets
are outrageously expensive. Are you a White Sox fan?
I am a White Sox fan. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, remember, we listened to your podcast.
I think I had a cousin, like a distant cousin, who briefly played for the White Sox many years ago.
That's awesome.
I don't think I ever met him. I think he was like a distant cousin.
But other than American stuff, though, what do you like to do in London? Like, what would you recommend people do or go to?
My biggest thing that I think that England just absolutely smashes is just the pub culture. It makes me sound like a bit of a lush, but honestly, like you just, in America, there's not just a place that like families and dogs and everyone can just go like sit and socialize in the same way.
America doesn't have it.
No, we don't.
Yeah.
You could make that argument for like coffee shops and stuff, but like America is not like Friends, you know, with the advent of like Starbucks and all of that stuff. You just don't see people like going to coffee shops to hang out with their families and stuff like that. So I really love pub culture. What else do I like to, I love a Sunday roast.
Do you like Yorkshire puddings?
Yes, I love Yorkshire puddings. Sausage rolls. Like I like a lot of, I love fish and chips. Yeah. Like
sausage rolls are a revelation.
Yeah. Like
those need to make it across the pond.
So my dad has become obsessed. He has to have them like every day when they visit.
my boss's wife is, she's actually Irish, but she's lived in England for a long time. And I'm sure the food for the most part is pretty similar. There's a lot of similarities between Irish and British food. And she makes the best homemade sausage rolls, and she brings them in, and literally people just flock into like the boardroom, just clear the plates out. It's amazing.
Yeah, they're so good.
Do you miss American barbecue?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good one, because I guess there are, in London, there are a couple places where you can get like half decent barbecue. So that's quite a good one.
Yeah. Have you been to Bodine's before?
Yes. Yeah.
That's pretty good. I think that's pretty damn close.
No, I actually did, funnily enough, two Thanksgivings ago, Bodine's did a massive Thanksgiving feast that I did there.
I didn't know
which
about
was
that.
Fun. It wasn't, they do like turkey stuffing and gravy and all that stuff, but they also do like baby back ribs, and which, you know, I wouldn't say is like super traditional Thanksgiving, but it was definitely very American.
Which one do you go to?
There's one in Clapham. That's the one.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we either go to Soho or Tower Hill, because, I mean, it's only for going into, you know, for London for something special. So, but I mean, the cornbread just takes me home. They had New England clam chowder for a long time, which they took off the menu, which I'm really sad about. And it was the only place I could find A&W root beer for a while, but they don't really do that there anymore either now.
Oh yeah. My God, I used to love A&W. Yeah.
You can't beat it.
It tastes like TCP.
Which is another thing.
I have actually gotten, like, you know, I don't know if I was like hormonal or something, but I was once in Tesco and saw like the little American section and got like properly misty. Like I was just, like, I got very, very homesick. Just like,
seeing the stores and stuff. What's funny about those American sections is, and you know, they're tiny, like, you obviously compared to going to an actual American store. But I think for anyone who hasn't been to America and you kind of think, like Pop-Tarts, for example. Like, yeah, we have Pop-Tarts, but we have them in chocolate, strawberry, and there's a white one. You go to America and there's like
a whole aisle.
Yeah, there's a whole aisle of every flavor you can think of, and then even more. And like,
I miss the brown sugar ones.
But that's basically characteristic of America in general. It's like, yeah, we have it, but we don't have it.
We have a lot of snack foods.
Well, I mean, I just like, I feel like, you know, for example, when there was that storm, was it Davis or whatever, like a couple weeks ago? Dennis. Yeah, you're right. You know, my boyfriend and I were it was a Sunday, and we were just like, you know, we need to just like get some board games and just like kind of post up. And I was just like, where the hell do you get board? Like, I was like, if we were back in America, we'd just drive to Target or Walmart or there's a million stores where you could go find like aisles beyond.
Because we have stores like that near us. Like, there's actually a full game shop right near us. But I don't know in London where you would go.
Yeah, we ended up going to Argos and got, like, a massively overpriced, you know, just original Monopoly. And it served its purpose. But, yeah, it's just, like, it wasn't as easy as it would have been back at home. But, yeah, you do make a good point that I feel like in more of, like, a suburban part of the UK, there's just stores that have more things than your, like, Tesco Express and stuff
I mean, you mentioned Target, like, Target, yes, Walmart, I was gonna say, and all that.
Speaking of Target, like, I don't cope well without
Target. She misses Target.
No, I don't either.
I wouldn't say more than my family, but my...
It's closer than it should be.
It's close. Like, after people, Target's what I miss the most. Like, I mean, it's pretty sad, actually. Like, God, it must be 7 or 8 years ago now. My dad's parents died really quickly within each other. And I was applying for my indefinite leave to remain at the time, so I didn't have my passport. And when my grandma died, you know, I said, you know, I'm not going to be able to make the trip. I'll make sure, you know, because my grandpa was getting on as well. I thought, you know, I'll be there for grandpa's funeral, which is a horrible thing to say, but that's kind of what the family discussions were. And then he died so quickly, my passport hadn't come back yet, and I was just like devastated. And came home from work. My dad had said, you know, he died, and I was hoping I'd try and speak to him because it all happened kind of fast. And drank a bottle of wine, and then Rich found me on the bathroom floor sobbing, and he's like, "Oh, I know. Your grandpa." And he's like, I miss Target. Like, I just kind of everything all at once. Just,
We don't have.
I've had that happen so many times, though. Like, it all just, like, well, because I feel like you have to, like, you just have to put up with a certain degree of just missing home all day, every single day. Yeah. You know, you just like, you have a level that it just becomes your normal, and then something just pushes you over that normal. And then it all just comes, like the valves release and it all comes out. I've had that so many times.
Yeah. And it's something you maybe wouldn't expect, like that would really obviously, like, you know, so I have young nieces and nephews and stuff, and their birthdays, you know, it's really hard for me to miss, and that's difficult. But sometimes it'll be something really random that I wouldn't think would upset me, you know, really did. Like, my brother just got a puppy, and I was thinking, like, I will never see that dog as a puppy. Like, by the time we go out there for Christmas, he'll be, like, almost a full-grown dog. Like, it just, the stuff you don't think about, but then hits you, it makes you a little bit sad.
It's the little things, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of big things too, but it's the little things, I think, that take you by surprise. And like,
I think it's the little things as well. Everyone would expect you to miss birthdays, Thanksgiving, but the little things is, one, there's a lot more of them. So yeah. like you said, Meg, you know, you kind of always feel a little bit homesick and everything. But I think those are probably the things that people would be more taken aback by, that, oh yeah, I didn't think you'd miss the dog. But they expect you to be really, you know, oh, I missed birthday and whatever.
Well, and I think, like, you know, I know, Andrew, you said that Rich's family has been like really welcoming to you, and that's great. I think that's something that I've also struggled with. Like, my boyfriend's family is, they're absolutely incredible and I adore them. But I think there's like this combination of, I am from America and particularly from Chicago. We're a very hard on our sleeve, like, open, emotional lot compared to the English that are notorious for being a bit more closed off.
Mm-hmm.
And
stiff upper lip.
Yeah. And then you just let, you combine that with the fact that, like, you know, I don't, especially like, I was single for the first, you know, 2.5-3 years of living in London, and then got into a serious relationship. That first 2.5 years, like, I spent one Easter with my flatmate's family, but I had no family per se.
Yeah, that's going to be, yeah, a whole nother.
Yeah, and then so, you know, just start dating, you know, my boyfriend, and then he introduced me to his family, and it's like, I got very, very, like, I am very attached to them, and sometimes I'm like, oh God, like, am I coming on so strong? But it's literally just because, like, they're just kind of like my surrogate family, and they are so kind to me, but it's just like, it's a very difficult thing where it's like, you don't want to be like, oh my God, she's so, like, lovey and obnoxious. But I'm just like, I just, you know, it's just nice that he's got a mom who, like, cooks for me, because I don't have one that does that over here. So,
yeah, I mean, your mom doesn't really cook for me because she just doesn't really cook. but I think we had some unique challenges in that, like, as awesome as Rich's family is, like, when we moved over here, we actually lived with, you know, his dad and his mom and stepdad for a while. So that was actually really hard. I think I saw very quickly, like, behaviors and habits of in-laws that you don't normally see, because you don't normally live, you know, straight away with them before you get to know them. So I think that was unique and probably made things a little bit more difficult for me, and probably, I think, kind of set the course for what that relationship is and probably will always be. So That was intense, I guess, is the way to say it.
Yeah, that's very intense.
Yeah, and it was a tricky time for them to kind of job changes and things like that, and moving. There was a lot going on for everyone, but, you know, I'll never forget the fact that they said, absolutely, when you move over here, you have a place in our home, and they supported us while I couldn't really work and I had savings and stuff. But the day to day, they didn't ask for anything, and it meant that we could be together. My family would have absolutely done the same for Rich,
yeah, I mean,
we moved
there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we were both fortunate with the other one's families.
Yeah.
Really. There was never any resentment or, I mean, even with the prospect of you moving here, your family didn't give me a hard time.
Mm-mm, no.
You know, so that was nice. But let's talk about your podcast, because I'm conscious about how much time we're going to keep you for. That's not a real sentence.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Because, I mean, what's nice about this episode for us is obviously it's slightly different. It's normally when we have guests on, it's couples, or we've had, you know, therapists and stuff on, and it's all very relationship focused. So I really like that talking to you is really peeling back the curtain a little bit on the realities of life away from home
in a different country or whatever. Yeah.
So and that's there's obvious benefits to our listeners for that. So I'm hoping that you'll get some listeners from this, and I want to say this is a really interesting chat. Let's go follow Meg. So for those people, can you just tell us a little bit about what you talk about and whatever you want to say about it, really?
Yeah, sure. No, that was very kind words. Thank you. I mean, honing in on kind of like a general theme to my podcast has probably been the biggest challenge. So I kind of just stick to like just kind of life from the lens of, you know, a 20 something American who moved to London is just kind of like the overarching theme. Get into so many different topics. I actually, you know, for something, a good starting point for your listeners, did an episode on long distance relationships with my friend Nadia, who is kind of like my resident dating expert. We've done a couple dating themed episodes. I kind of, from the perspective of, I was in several long distance relationships, none of which ended up kind of panning out, but they were all really good learning experiences. Nadia is in like a really successful relationship that was long distance for quite a period. So things like that, to just like kind of weekly updates on things that everyone in London seems to be talking about. Like everyone's watching Love is Blind. There was the like You obsession. So a lot of different Netflix reviews and things like that. And then I also do reviews of different places that I'm visiting throughout the UK. So I've done a review of Bath, a day in Canterbury, and as well as like places like Paris and Italy and stuff like that. So it's kind of a mixed bag, but I do that a bit intentionally so that different people can come in and listen to different episodes that they think might interest them. And then if that leads them to listen to an episode that they wouldn't have thought would interest them, that's great as well. But yeah, that's kind of what Gin and Beer is all about.
We'll have a link to it in our show notes, but it's the Gin and Beer It pod. I keep wanting to say Bear It, but yeah.
Thanks so much, Meg, for joining us. It was nice to not be the odd man out for once. And yeah, we'll make sure we try and get everyone to go check out your podcast, and we'll be getting together soon.
Yeah, thank you so much, Rich and Andrew. I really enjoyed it. Hope to speak again soon.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Have a great week.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.